So in the spirit of the new year, who gives a fuck? No. I mean, let's set the tone for a prosperous new year. Or not. One could say that the least common denominator of what we refer to as, you know, human experience. Well, there are several of them. One is that we have no idea what's going on ever, which is a good thing, which is kind of a liberating realization. And that suffering or unsatisfactoriness and apprehension and all the control dramas that we're so capable of using to exploit ourselves and everybody else are all the result of thinking that we do know what's going on or what this is and why it is. So we're driven by more or less unconscious or semi-conscious forces that we have misinterpreted as being the evidence for our individuated existence. That's the basic dilemma. We don't see it. We don't give it any attention. We don't realize it or even care to understand the mechanism of our own individuation. We just presume it to be, well, God-given. And so then we conduct ourselves in a more or less condition of chaos and compensation to the grave. And we eke out, if we're lucky, a little bit of joy, maybe a little bit of affection, fond memories, perhaps globally recognized accomplishments in a field. But, you know, most of us, you could say, remain on the receiving end of the entertainment. The entertainment paradigm. We're entertained by TV and celebrity and politics and world events and books and movies and all kinds of, you could say, titillating distractions of reality. And of course, we may have parental obligations or sibling obligations, obligations to the church, obligations to the state, obligations to a religious ideology. And all of these things, you know, serve to, in a sense, kind of, you know, define us and create the, you know, the great mythos of the human story. And we don't typically realize how attached or loyal we are to the great, you know, body of human story. And we presume that what we've been told and what we felt and what we've been educated to believe is actually true, or at least a reasonable facsimile of what is true. And it's a rare, relatively rare human being that is inspired to question the whole matrix. Because you don't know what you're going to discover if you question the whole matrix. You're an absolute pioneer. A pioneer in your own so-called consciousness. You're a pioneer in your own experience.
It seems to take some kind of jarring in one's life to reconsider the whole framework.
Jarring, boxing, bricking, ear candling.
Yodeling.
Could take yodeling. If you haven't tried yodeling, you don't know what's on the other side of it. So you might want to try yodeling and say, why was I bothering with all that jarring when I could have just done yodeling? I would have gotten this far much faster. Yeah. Or ring dinging. If you don't like yodeling, you could have tried ring dinging.
Well, eating ding dongs.
Ding dongs is good. Yeah. Could be Entenmann's, could be, you know, that Tasty Cake Bakery. Nabisco, that's right off Route 1. Yeah, you don't know what it takes. We are capable of assuming and creating and hypnotizing ourselves into a spontaneously cogent hypnosis of relevancy. We can justify anything. We can find an answer, an explanation for anything. And if the physics doesn't work, we can blame it on the unseen. And most all religion blames it on the unseen. At least when you go out dancing, you can blame it on the bossa nova and get more mileage from that. But if you're blaming it on the unseen, then you can have a group like the Star Group and arouse people into fantastical thinking, because you are the authority of the unseen if you're the one that's sponsoring or promoting the unseen. And that's how the church works. The church is in complicity with the greater, call it human experiment, the greater political experiment. You know, the ultimate, let's just say, hegemony of, you know, the dollar, hegemony of, right, cash, hegemony of property ownership, of investment in oil and gas, like a Dakota Access Pipeline or the banking system. The church all complicit within the same, you know, system of the accumulation and ownership and then protection of wealth and capital, whether that wealth and capital is, you know, physical assets like carving up the earth into the hands of the one-tenth of the 1%, or whether it's mind capital, like controlling the narrative. Who are the Republicans and their president-elect and his cabinet of demonic sycophants that are about to and making meaningful progress trashing, you know, call it a couple hundred years of so-called democratic sovereignty, which has been whittled away maybe the day after they signed the fucking Declaration of Independence or the Constitution? By whom? Well, the same banks that invested in the revolution in the first place. So we are whether we're democratic or republican or capitalist or socialist or communist, or, you know, or we're heading for a decapitation chamber under the generous auspices of Kim Jong-un. Everybody is pretty much in the same curious boat of a well, you could call it an innocent or a pernicious wave of influence that dictates what you're allowed to believe, to think, and do, and what you're entitled to do to, you know, actualize or enjoy yourself. And we just fall into step at every step of the way. We're also, therefore, complicit in a curiously myopic, if not self-deterministically extinction-driven dream of exploitation, like a bacteria or virus in your body will do whatever it has to do to pursue its own hegemony, even at the expense of the survivability of the host. So are we behaving with the bounty and inexplicable beauty of the earth that has nourished our very being. So it won't be long now. You may as well enjoy yourself for the time remaining. Yeah, no wonder Ruth left. Who'd want to hear this shit?
Starting out on a positive note.
Yeah, we want to set the tone for a really prosperous 2017. Yeah.
I thought that was like AA or Al-Anon type thing. You know, the Star Group?
Al-Anon?
No.
What's the Star Group?
I would imagine.
When she originally approached me, she said, is there a Reiki share group tonight?
Oh, the Reiki share group. And they're not meeting tonight.
No longer.
Yeah. It's gone out of business?
That's when I said, you probably want to go to that building.
Oh.
It's called to start. It's called to end it.
Well, there you go.
So it may continue if there's...
We could do a craniosacral group.
Yeah, this is definitely not a Reiki share group.
Ryan? Ryan 1.
Ryan 1. Rogue 1.
Make him Ryan 2 just to make him man.
Now, the interesting thing is that whatever comes into, let's say, your atmosphere of curiosity, your atmosphere of interest, of self-education, your atmosphere of, you know, call it a craving, whether driven or not, for spiritual something or other, right? If you can really notice the curious texture of atmosphere arising in your present consciousness and your present experience, you can kind of see it and feel it as like a siren. And you are happy to be driven to the rocks. Once that siren permeates your awareness and you imagine that you have stumbled upon a journey worth taking, a spiritual journey worth taking, a career journey worth taking, a relationship journey worth taking, you know, off to photograph snow leopards in the high altitude Himalayas.
I read that book.
Okay.
I did too.
There you go. Mm-hmm. Now with no care and no thought in the world, presume that we are the instigators, provocateurs, free-willed originators of these atmospheres of curiosity and interest and impulse field. And then we refer to the spontaneous recognition of a, call it a motivating atmosphere, as I chose, I decided. When it's pretty clear, even if you can spend 30 seconds meditating, you don't. I mean, 3 is good. 30 is probably more than you need. But if you can spend anywhere between 3 to 30 seconds in meditation, you will be startled by just how much of a poser you actually are. But we also are so indoctrinated into what we refer to as self-will, self-determinism, the pursuit of happiness, that we fail to take notice of some of the most curious observations that a, let's say, contemplatively minded human being can make. And even amongst the minions of contemplatively minded human beings, they miss this shit entirely. So you can see the matrix of craving, past, future, anticipation, apprehension, mind control, control dramas, self-justification, accumulation, artful skills, creativity, manipulation, pursuit of success, pursuit of validation, pursuit of attention, wanting to be of service to others, even some of the most gnarly way to be a human being. And we justify this repugnant heresy day in and day out. Or we go to, let's say, you know, the guru, the teacher, the savant, for, you know, succor, instruction, guidance, reinforcement. And those types will be happy to give that to you in exchange for your adoration, adulation, money. They turn you into an annuity in hopes of giving you a morsel of something or other to do, which may excite you for a moment or two, But you'll soon see, if you stay with it, how disappointing you are, the practices, and the person you got it from. And you're back, thankfully, to square one, which is an involuntary receipt of spontaneously and impersonally arising atmospheres of so-called impulse and justification. And you don't know what the fuck to do with yourself, ever, which is a liberating realization. But we reject that out of hand and replace it with a thousand ways that I'm capable of justifying my existence on Earth and what I should and will do about it. So consciousness has tricked you into presuming individuated existentialism. Consciousness has fooled you into presuming that you are primarily a born creature, sensual creature, and that you derive your nourishment from the gifts that consciousness has to offer you. Now you're in a codependent relationship with experiencing itself as through the lens of being an individuated creature, and you'll never be happy that way. Though you can approximate happiness, it'll never actually settle in, because the shock of self and other will persist. And that disappointment will not be ameliorated by anything that you can find in consciousness. Who controls Bill Gates' wealth? Does he have it in dollar bills, hundreds, gold bars, silver? If you're worth billions and billions of so-called dollars, what do you got? A house in Redmond? A strip mall? Do you own an entire state? Maybe you've purchased an island somewhere or a country. Who's in control of your actual wealth? Not you. You've given it out when whatever it is intangible anyway. So even if you're like mega, mega, super, super, super duper enviably wealthy and you can fly to Atlanta to get a fried peanut butter sandwich and then go see a Lacage show that was put on just for you, you're still absolutely dependent upon consciousness, the accoutrements of consciousness, your own sensuality, the impulses of your own decision-making, whether it's altruistic or whether it's criminal or both. And you don't get out. We'd like to think that, oh, well, if I'm successful at sports and music and oration and writing, and I could be recognized in a society and sell a million books called Be Here Now or The Power of Now or TikTok, TikTok, I can, you know, validate my pain body and the resolution of that pain body and be, right, of use to so many millions of people, or I can talk to Oprah Winfrey about Jesus. Like, wow, that's the big time.
For the time being.
The big time for the time being. And I have found something to share with the muggle minions that have made them sufficiently happy that they're willing to come see me at a theater for a mere $300 while I speak bullshit into their shallow ears. And if I can find, you know, a famous spokesmodel to be my, you know, warm up. Jim Carrey, maybe. Or someone else. Dr. Phil. Can't get David Bowie to perform anymore. Then, yeah, this is really working for me. I'm so enlightened. You have no idea how happy I am. We want to derive pleasure, satisfaction, success, vetability, justifiability from what we find in consciousness as consciousness. And consciousness ain't got nothing for you. You're trying to draw some kind of cosmic, if not transcendent, nourishment from a dry, watering hole. This is pretty bleak.
Well, and you know, even though one might appreciate that, there's still the habit of going back to this, you know, fountain, at least what you think is a fountain, for some refreshment. And it just never seems to work out.
No, it doesn't work, but there's no reason not to keep bowing down and, you know, trying to exactly sip from that.
Like,
yeah,
bird, right?
I can't get a drop from this fountain, but I'll just keep hitting the button and trying to, like, you know, get what I can from it. Yeah. See, that's, there's a, you could say, a very foundational kind of paradoxical thing to see within the life of a, you know, contemplatively minded, you know, card carrying seeker fucker, which is, shit's just not going my way. What do I do about that? And then you'll find a thousand things that pretend to give you a path and a justification and a solution and a deliverable for your fundamentally vague existential angst to be relieved. And we look to symptoms and superficialities and ideas and hypotheticals and hypnosis and the so-called authority of others that have come before us as the destination for our succor. And we just find posers everywhere. It's posers everywhere. But it's unfair to try to convince someone of these, you know, bleak and perhaps unpopular notions. Because if you're still invested in being nourished by the teat of consciousness, then you're going to refuse these observations, and you would be wise to refuse these observations.
You should write a poem on that, The Teat of Consciousness.
Sure.
I'll try it.
I know.
I'm choosing the middle path.
There's no teat.
Teat, man. You what?
Just a while ago?
Yeah. People are really uncomfortable if you I found out on Facebook of announcing that you don't really believe in anything.
Oh,
it's,
well,
it's ridiculous.
They make an assumption.
The reaction.
I will pray for you.
What?
Yeah, you're in my.
Well, you're just testing the water of your, you know, Facebook friends, right? They don't. They're not interested in the real you.
Yeah.
They're just interested in the, you know, the theatrical you.
I was reading a book, and there was a, the line just struck me. It's just such a very nice quote about, I really don't know what I believe anymore. And
yeah.
And I thought, boy, that really strikes a note with me. And,
yeah.
And I put it on there, and you would have thought that, you know.
People would have applauded that somehow.
They'd be like, oh, my God, what's wrong? What's the matter? What do you, you know.
There you go.
Do you need to talk?
Yeah.
Tell me. And I was like, yeah.
Right. All of a sudden,
right,
you're suicidal.
Just shared like a kind of
money.
Ad for painkillers or something.
Just
you know?
$5.
Send money.
Well, if you if you tap the muggle bubble in a a provocative way, in a, even in a simple, sincere, liberating movement, that muggle bubble is going to come back at you. Yeah. I mean, it's not a fun thing to learn. Can be painful because we're relying on the greater muggle bubble, you know, to keep ourselves above water. But look at the price that you pay for participating in a repugnant conformist reality that everyone is depending upon, rather unconsciously. Mm-hmm. And if you say even the slightest thing, which, you know, rings true to you, stimulates your IQ, you know, opens your mind up to possibilities that are unseen. Well, the muggle bub, they'll come at you with, you know, rakes and shit like they did to the Frankenstein monster. So.
It was very unsettling. I was like, oh, well, what am I just doing?
Yeah. Well, congratulations. I hope that the loss of friends will continue unabated. Yeah. I mean, sliding down into this thing, you know, it can be entertaining, titillating up to a point. But if you really start sliding down into it, you're going to lose friends. You can't have it both ways. You're not going to be nourished by participating in the greater muggle conformist bubble of reality and be true to something that has, you know, is beckoning you for a non-ordinary ascension. So, fuck you and fuck them. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, really, sliding into this thing is the flatlining of codependency. Which makes it a little scary because we thrive on codependency somewhat, you know, unconsciously. Yeah. And it's not just codependency with, you know, behavioral memes, behavioral expectations, functioning in the society as the sheep that we are. No, the codependency is deeper than that. And that thrills you, but scares someone that thinks they know you. Oh, well.
Well, it's funny, I was watching Stephen Colbert, and he had Oprah on, speaking of Oprah, and you know how she's always got something going on, like she's, you know, either Deepak Chopra, or she's just involved with all these leaders, and
yeah.
the newest, greatest thing, and...
Weight Watchers.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So Stephen said, so, you know, what's your New Year's resolution, and... She just, it was just so funny because she, it seems like she finally just gave up because she said,
wow.
Not a one. She said, you know, years ago I asked for courage and she said, I brought all this stuff into my life that just stirred up everything and I had to prove myself with, you know, with courage. And she said, and then I asked for something else another year. And she said, I'm tired. She kind of just like let go of all that.
Is she here tonight? Is she going to give us all a car?
Mm-hmm. It was just funny to hear her say that because she's usually proselytizing and you know like the newest greatest
very
thing. And she was finally
I'm done. Well, she had enough money 30 years ago to be done.
Yeah.
You know, now that's finally caught up with her.
Yeah.
She's like, I don't need to prove anything to anybody anymore.
Right.
Nice. Yeah. There's a quality of intelligence that's able to parse evidence. That's, you could say, a kind of a materialist aspect of your innate intelligence. You can parse evidence. What's evidence? Where you think you are is evidence. How you got there is evidence. Why you came is evidence. What you hope to gain, if anything, is evidence. What you'll do when you go home. What's on your day planner for the rest of the week? How are you feeling? Are you taking all the medications that you've been given? Are you slacking off on your vitamins? Are you going to eat better this week? Or there are some holiday leftovers that even though they're a week old, I got to get my hands into them. Am I a new age sensitive guy? What? So we're just consumed by the apparitional, involuntary appearance of, call it evidence, to create context and content for what we're going to do next about ourselves or with ourselves. Maybe I'll go to the Democratic meeting. It doesn't really satisfy me. Maybe I'll send a letter and ask my senator and my senators and my representatives to refuse Jeff Sessions as the Attorney General, which is more or less like putting the Fourth Reich into power. I don't know what I'll do. So you see, there's a quality of intelligence that's capable of processing the hypnotic seduction of what we will call evidence. But there's another quality of intelligence. And that quality of intelligence is not processing evidence. It's not processing you. It's not processing the way you feel about anything. It's not processing physical sensation. It's not processing the spontaneously arising context for who you think you are, who you've been, and who you'd like to be a moment from now. It's just not. You are absolutely apparitional. And this quality of intelligence knows that you appearing to it is absolutely apparitional. And so it just, it drops the whole show. It doesn't process. It's not dependent on, you know, the creature. It's not dependent on biology. It's not dependent on the genesis of, you know, call it intelligent life on Earth. It's not. It's unscathed. And we don't know what to do with it because we're so object-driven, we're so evidence-driven, right? We actually occur as, you could call it, the tension of evidence found. That's how we say I am. Evidence found creates a tension field which makes it appear as if there's something other than you. Anything other than you. Even you being other than you. That's the tension field of materialistic intelligence which operates according to evidence found. But that's all apparitional. But this other quality of intelligence doesn't know anything about anything. Nor is it really interested in knowing anything about anything. You could say it's so profoundly, transcendently autonomous that emptiness is its name. And even that's saying too much.
We certainly can't claim it.
No. 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 But that's the realm of, you know, a cathartic, shamanic shift in, call it loyalty or attention. You're not dependent upon evidence, consciousness, sensation for anything. You're not dependent upon or contributory to conformist reality, to the myth and the mirth and the denial of conformist reality. We're not talking about morality or ethics or stream entry. I'm not talking about duality or non-duality. We're not talking about some kind of clever genesis that explains what the mind is and why it is what it is and how it does what it does and what's in store for you. We're not.
No prosperity talk.
Man. I think I'm just going to take the cookie and leave.
Yeah.
I call that a win.
Cookie out
the whole plate.
I call that a win. Yeah, take the cookie and run. Or saunter down the steps. There's no reason to get to the next place in any hurry. This is the dilemma we have been made to believe, that optimizing our experience is a good way to function. And we do so, you could say, at the expense of our greater passion. We look to local and superficial satisfactions at the expense of nourishing our greater passion. If you attempt to look into your life, your morality, your ethicality, your spirituality, your PTSD, you know, all the great and horrible things that have happened to you since you can recall in this lifetime or perhaps even others, you're simply going to find a morass of implication. And then you're naturally going to assign some kind of sentimentality to that which you imagine you have found being somehow responsible or contributory to who you take yourself to be now, behaviorally or otherwise. And by digging deeper or working with a therapist or doing some kind of Jungian thing or going to the star group or wherever it is we go to get some kind of, you know, succor or relief, you're not going to budge. You'll still remain under that formidable hypnosis of relying upon evidence for being the reason you exist and or are enjoying or disappointed in that existence. There is no cosmology. This never began. It's not happening now. And we can't be sure whether it's going to end or not. But you can place your bets. Freedom can't be the result of anything, the consequence of anything, the resolution of anything. Freedom can't be found through material abundance. It's always very challenging, but kind of a fun challenge, you know, to, let's say, have the privilege of speaking with people that are lending you the gift of their attention and pretend as if you have something of value to say for them. You don't. You can't. You don't and you can't. Well, that doesn't have to stop you, though, from, you know, finding a place and sitting around and loitering. Angst is a short word for separative existence, durable, individuated, separative existence. Angst. And the projection of, you know, how it's going to be for me, for the society, for the culture, for the constitution, for the Muslims and the blacks and the Jews and anybody else that can appear to be unfriendly to Trump, Pence, Sessions and their merry band of psycho thieves. Could be a very unsettling, you know, way of responding. But as bad as that can be, you could say it's a lot more relaxed than Aleppo. Or thousands of other hotspots where
people are either starving to death or getting the shit bombed out of them.
Where people are starving to death or getting the shit bombed out of them, yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you talk too lofty, you know, for too long, that can create another, you know, kind of sanguine, fantastical thinking. It's not that easy to, you could say, wander between worlds. You know, the world where Nirsagadatta's absolute was nonplussed, regardless of, you know, the torment of the creatures on the planet, and the world of being somehow, you know, responsive to, call it, you know, geopolitical insecurity. I don't know. Beware the enlightened woman or the enlightened man that, you know, is demonstrating too lofty a persona. We might flock to them for, you know, succor and relief from the madness of the world. And they may steal your heart away. At what cost? Yeah. If there were so-called intelligent species that have either lived before us or that are presently existence that come from other, you know, galactic cores or stars within the great expanse of our own Milky Way, you know, who knows what level of, you know, consciousness and technological accomplishment they may be at. Whether we are actually sitting in a field replete, overflowing, abundant to the point of incomprehensibility in the midst of intelligent creatures from who knows what dimension. We might be sitting right in the midst of it all, and they're like, no, no, keep the screens up. Don't let those fuckers know we're here. They're not ready. Most likely, that fucking species, it's lights out.
That's the way it's looking.
That's the way it's going. Lights out on that species. Beautiful planet. Love the color. They're not going to make it. So all of our, you know, SETI and YETI sightings, right, are looking into the greater cosmos for evidence of intelligent life, and they're just like, they're right here, actually, in the room. I mean, they're with us now. They're like, you go, Night Sky Sangha. Give it the best you got. We're like counting on you. But the rest of you fuckers, it's lights out. Who knows? The electromagnetic spectrum in the periodic table might be simply very, very minute wavelengths of, call it, conscious possibility. So we would have no way of finding a TCP/IP connection with qualities of intelligence that are not consciousness dependent.
We're just operating in like one imaginary time scale and one bandwidth of speed of light or whatever.
Yeah.
Crap.
Yeah.
So we think everything distance wise, of course.
Yes.
Following that protocol, it's like, maybe not.
We're riding a thin filament, and then we're presuming that the physics that we have, you know, come to measure is abiding for the whole universe. And everyone else is going, lights out for you fuckers. Yeah. And you can, and I mean, it's just as plausibly true as anything else is plausibly true. I mean, just look at us. You know, opposable thumb, neocortex, hell realm. I went to see the Assassin's Creed. You know?
Is that a movie?
Yeah.
Based on a video game?
Well, I've never played the video game. I just went to see the movie. I'm kind of dull that way. Not well read. But I'm sure it was loosely connected, yeah. Yeah. And a lot of the movie looked like a video game. There was a huge amount of stabbing going on. And I was like...
Sounds like a popular video game.
I think I'm in the middle of a video game. Anyway, it was just a wonderful premise, you see. There was good and evil. That's no surprise. Evil was portrayed by the Templars, the church, that wanted to control the species at large, but through the ruse of relieving humanity from evil. Now, there was a magic weapon that existed in this world called the Apple of Eden. So when Eve took a bite of this mythological tool, that was the sign of humanity's first utterance at 2 years old of no. Right? Basically, Eve bit the apple, and before you knew it, Adam and Eve were like, no, no, no. Cast out of Eden into the world of, you know, misery and troublemaking. So, this apple of Eden contained the subtle genetic code that, if released, maybe put into the water, I don't know, exploded overhead, would render us all back into the obedient happiness of living with nudity and no shame. Good luck with that. Now, the assassins were a highly skilled, highly trained creed that whose commitment it was, at the expense of their own life, of course, to protect the Apple of Eden from ever getting in the hands of the Templars that would have used it as a tool to render everybody else powerless. Much like the president-elect. How curious.
It's like the Lord of the Rings in real life.
Yep, over and over again.
Over and over again.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Free will. The assassins were protecting the right to free will, which could include all the gnarly shit that human beings get involved in, so that we wouldn't become mind controlled. And as I'm watching the movie, I'm thinking, too late. They must have got the apple, because it's way too late. It's way too late. And you can see it. I mean, you know, it's a little unnerving. I mean, it's kind of thrilling, but, it can keep you up, make you a little depressed. When you scan, call it the beautiful tapestry of, let's say, human history, and you scan it through the eyes of how conformist reality has been perpetrated through the church and the state and the educational system and the organization of, nation states. And you're like, oh, too late. They got us. And it can be a little unnerving, because if you do travel down the wormhole of that kind of perspective, you're alone. Where are you going to find someone, present company excluded, of course, where are you going to find someone that's like somehow tuned into something that's so curiously subtle. And underneath, you know, the safety net of conformist reality, to douse and gaze upon something that is quite profoundly unsettling. It's just like saying something lovely from something that you read, putting it out into Muggle land and getting this, the pushback. Yeah. Yeah. That's how asleep we are. That's how asleep this is. Yeah. Yeah. Death and taxes. Would you think that, you know, Hinduism and Buddhism and chanting and yoga and mono diets, fasting and macrobiotism and every other goddamn thing you can find under the sun would be somehow useful to you, and they're not. Because all they're going to do is replace one set of fantasy for their set of fantasy. And that's all you can find in consciousness, is iterative sets of cosmology, which is fantasy. And that's how the myth of authority is created. If not for the decapitation and the weapons and the vaccines and the chemtrails and the suppression of free speech and the militarization of anyone, where's the authority?
It's the you that's seeking. That's what it all comes to. It's not the thing they're grabbing that is actually the problem. It's the one who thinks they're grabbing.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah. It doesn't have, you know, there is no, call it, cogent explanation for anything. Or cogent implication for anything. Though concussion weapons, water cannons, and rubber bullets can certainly chase a bunch of Native Americans away from a pipeline. Yeah. An illegally constructed pipeline with the blessing of the Army Corps of Engineers and the banks and the politicians and the illegal police forces that were set to unleash violence upon nonviolent protesters enjoying constitutional rights on private property. But Snowden still lives in Russia, and Chelsea Manning's having a really hard life. Thanks, Obama. We'll miss you.
You can finally say that with no hint of irony.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, any pile of bullshit is just as, you know, useful and entertaining as any other pile of bullshit. If we sat here talking about dependent origination all night, stream entry, or non-duality, you know, what the fuck? It's just another wave of, you know, gratuitous hallucination. And yet, the craving that we have, right, to cling or cleave to something that makes this real and reliable and useful somehow, or pleasant or new agey or contemplatively satisfying, that craving won't quit. That's the intelligence that finds evidence and needs to make something of evidence to keep the hegemony of self alive and well and happy. A demonic laughter.
And it was.
And we don't know what to do about the core of this, right, imposed hegemony that we're really not into, but we don't know how to shake it. We don't know what to do about it. And this, call it greater quality or more subtle quality of intelligence that is not dependent on anything. I mean, it's abundant beyond imagination, but it's not pushy.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of a weird interface, you know, to discover something that's not pushy, turning out to be, a rabbit hole into, right, the release of existential panic. You have to be a little bit of a trickster in terms of how you relate to the only evidence that you have, which is present experience. And the way that you relate to whatever present experience is has a lot to do with whether you're whisked away by fantasy or whether you're, let's just say, use the metaphor of capable of holding your ground and not be pushed around by the incessant atmospheres that are arising that seduce you into activity and consequence. We're fucked. We love to find something that's actually compelling. We're a little intimidated by not knowing what this is and no longer needing to do anything with it. We think, oh, that's freedom. That could be joy. That could be liberation. That could be this. That could be that. No, 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 no. It's really like, whoa, the fuck was that? Right? Freedom from the known. What the fuck was that? Jeez. Satan, get behind me. Yeah. Superficially, we want to call it comfort, joy, freedom, security, you know, existential, ascended master, meetings with remarkable men and women, news and, you know, secrets and information that make us somehow invulnerable. You know, that we're interested in. But to be absolutely flatline? No, thank you. I want stuff. I want to remain within the context of evidence found and arousing implications, so I know what to do next, so I can be of service to others. Maybe write a book. Maybe be recognized. Something, anything, please. Something, anything. I'll do anything. The it's too fucked up. We could spend a whole life seeking, for good measure and with all due sincerity and so-called earnestness, right? Magical Nirsaga Dada word. If you're earnest, this will come to you. I don't think that's going to work. Now, we create the hallucination of creature in time under the influence of these atmospheres of implication and motivating forces that give us the relief of knowing what to do next in some kind of satisfactory manner. And that's delusional. That's samsara. But we'll go for it over and over and over and over and over again. Right? So you could say the fun trap door is that present experience is the wormhole and the fulfillment of the unconditioned. This is it. This is liberation. Just this, just as it is. Make no mistake about it. But because we're so evidentiarily driven, this isn't it. It's got to be something fucking else. A vision. A visitation. An insight. A remarkable moment. Love. Gratitude. Deep surrender. No. No, it doesn't have to be any of those things. And thankfully, it's not any of those things. You cannot do anything to resolve the fantasy that attracts your attention here and now. Because if you do anything with the fantasy that is cajoling you and attracting your attention here and now, well, you just swallowed the pill. You remain in it. You remain under its influence. Because you reinforce instantaneously with no effort at all the myth of being a creature dependent on biology and consciousness and the Big Bang or the Great Turtle or whomever and whatever to thank for your very existence. So you're not sovereign, you see? You're not sovereign. You're individuated. You're the product. You're the consequence of something else, perhaps, that came into being prior to now. Nothing came into being prior to now. Not the Big Bang, not the Great Turtle, not Brahman. No. Nothing came into being prior to now that can be held responsible, accountable for your existence. That's a very big blasphemy as concerns conformist reality, whether it's the conformist reality of the physicists, the agnostics, the atheists, or everyone that suffers from religious ideation. This is how you hold the asan, the seat of absolute autonomy. And you're not pushed around, shoved around, or made to be the product of some kind of fantasy, which gives you further justification to imagine that you're operating in time. Thank God none of the yogas work. There is no liberation because there's no liberated or liberating subject. And there are no objects to be liberated from. If you're quarreling with your imagination, you remain a product of that imagination. You don't have to be special or kind-hearted or end up with, you know, bright, glowing, attractive eyes. You don't have to be mysterious. You pierce the veil of hallucination not by finding some kind of contrary evidence. See, as long as you're on the lookout for contrary evidence, you remain a product of that hallucination. So you don't liberate through the discovery of anything that's evidentiary. Isn't that curious? Because we're thinking, I've suffered so much, right? Why hast thou forsaken me? No, no. In this way, the flatlining of self is remarkably simple and unadorned. It's very undramatic. Because you're not looking for, toward, call it experiential evidence. You're not looking to the field of sensate, sensorial, imaginative consciousness to provide you with any feedback at all. And so that liquidation, you can say, even in a little way, which is fine, a little way from time to time is big medicine. Really, it is. We're looking for some, you know, never to turn back from event. Now, fuck that. Just a little bit of nothing at all, randomly occurring, will kick your ass all the way down. This is unsought. Presence is unsought, unseeking. It doesn't do anything with itself or about itself. It has no agenda, no conditioning. It hasn't come from anywhere. It's not bound for glory.
So maybe the virtue of the path of knowledge is the inevitability of total exhaustion. Yeah.
Yep.
It's like, okay, that shit didn't work. You know?
Leif and I were doing Jeopardy today on the phone. We could hardly breathe. It was nothing works for 100, Alex. Right? Alex, I'll take nothing works for 100. Sitting on a cushion, upright, breathing slowly. What is yoga? That's right. I'll take nothing works for 200, Alex. Right? And we went on and on and on and on. I mean, it was hysterical. Even Beth was walking around. She could hardly stand up. Nothing works, Jeopardy. What's the bureaucratic remnant, right? What's the bureaucratic remnant of the life of Ramakrishna? Right? What is Advaita Vedanta? That's right. I'll take nothing works for 300, Alex. It just goes on and on and on. Nothing works. Nothing can. It's a different quality of intelligence or passion or compassion. When you're relieved of the myth that anything could possibly work,
and you say, I guess a pun on nothing works.
Nothing works. That's the good news. Which is the same as a kind of an organic, right, exhaustion with the presumption of, how do I fulfill myself once again as a creature in time? And this time it'll work. This time it'll stick.
Because otherwise it seems to be this idea, this notion or whatever, that there's some sort of puzzle you got to put together. And with your intellect and all the resources of your being, you can actually achieve that and find enlightenment.
You can be the co-creator. Yeah.
You have odd conversations on the phone with Leif, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. We do.
Unlike your standard conversation.
No. We get into blasphemous hysteria pretty much right off the bat. It's good. Laughing helps you digest.
Yeah.
We're beleaguered by the pressure of wanting and or needing something to be true.
Really, if you don't have expectations, like, where's the drama?
How you noticed? Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, many of us thrive on drama to relieve ourselves, keep a distance from that existential evaporation that we dare not feel.
Yeah, and it is exhausting.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's I guess it's easy to see in others, like, because you're like, oh, what
yep.
are they doing?
Yeah.
Why are they doing that? And, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I do that too.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But it is exhausting.
Yeah.
You have all these expectations of the way things should be.
Sure.
And
that's right.
Trying to keep them in place somehow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just create all this drama.
Yeah.
Entertainment.
Yes. That's right. Juggling fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be that the extraterrestrial friends or intelligences that we are perhaps quietly craving to have some communion with are not to be found in what we call the manifest universe. It could be that the hologram of what appears as an infinity of galactic superclusters beyond boundary is just another fantasy of the filament of our own consciousness. Yeah. So we're looking for, is there anybody else out there? But we're looking into really, really, I mean, magically, incomprehensibly infinite field of anything goes. But still, even within its own infinity, it could be an isolating presumption. So what if, as this, you know, goes through a more cathartic, shamanic shift in assemblage point or vibratory sensitivity, we're no longer looking for companions within the known universe. We see that we are surrounded by those companions, but in a an infinity that we had no idea was defining at a different level of hierarchy. You see, so the universe that we find ourselves in as cogent, you know, plasma beings on the surface of what we call Earth, living in the habitable zone, right, of the local star. It's a fucking star. It's not the fucking sun. It's a fucking star, and it's right up your ass. I mean, it's 93 million miles away. It's fucking star.
It's the heat lamp in the sky.
It's a giant heat lamp in the sky.
There's varying opinions on how far away it is now.
That's right. So, well, if it's a flat Earth, like, then it maybe it's not that far.
Yeah, it's just right here, right?
Yeah, it could be just really kind of over the horizon and a little bit to the right, depending on how you're sailing. But you see, the hypnosis of the way that this, you know, so-called creature of vibratory randomness creates the universe that can be perceived, then we presume that it's that way for everybody, including the Arcturians and the Pleiadians.
That's like, I just am thinking of like when you dream at night, and if you start, seems to be in my experience anyway, if you start kind of taking things in very differently, your output is different, like whatever that means. But your entire dream structure can change. You know, you could start having really weird, different dreams that have nothing, you know, that are just strange.
Unrecognizable.
All kinds of strange things.
Yes.
Where there's no person, no people, and whatever. It's just different ways of experiencing.
Yeah.
So, like, if that seeps in, it seeps in the whole, permeates the entire field.
That,
because it's like just like an idea, an imaginary construct.
Yes. That would be, let's say, the wormhole for communion of a different order of magnitude. Yeah. That communion is not operating, you know, like poor Whitley Strieber that got, you know, analyzed by the Greys. Poor Whitley Strieber.
Well, now you said analized. That gets a giggle. Yeah. Cheap, analyzed.
I know. You have to throw in some.
I don't know that reference either. Who's that?
You don't know Whitley Strieber?
No.
At your next point,
you're in luck.
Be analyzed by consciousness.
Yeah. And I'm not saying it didn't happen, you know. I mean, Whitley may very well have been, you know, consummated against his will.
By aliens.
Okay. Yeah.
Anal probes.
Yeah. Yeah. With all due respect to Whitley, let's just say there are other, call them textures of communion.
people's ass? No. Come on.
Lipstick on a pig?
What are you talking about?
Well, like putting lipstick on a pig.
You're taking this too far.
I mean,
if
you look, then that's another, of course. I mean, if you just look at the matrix of your one's own craving, one's own identity structure, one's own creation of the world and how to behave in it in a, you know, formidable or successful or sanguine or contemplative or compassionate manner, it's all manufactured. It's a kind of a self-fulfilling, if not self-condemning prophecy. And that is what, let's say, you know, a wildly insane sojourner into the realm of non-duality and beyond is interested in, let's say, piercing. The presently arising atmospheres of implication, motivation, justification that have us thinking in the way that we're thinking. And placing ourselves once again in the context of time-space as a human with an allotment.
Well, we're victims of the conceptualizations that have been that are at hand.
Yeah.
And they start young, too, because look, conceptualizing time.
Right? They start them young. Count to five. There's 7 days in the week.
Today is January 5th.
Today is January something. Got that down. Next.
Great year of 2000.
15 days till doomsday. Yeah. Far out.
We'll be over soon. Yay!
15 days till giant DB from hell takes over.
Yeah.
The United States of America.
That's right.
What a joke.
Or not.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Open mind.
He might just analyze himself.
Well, then he will be coming out of his room.
That's good.
I mean, how does the church capture your attention and your loyalty and your fealty? Through faith, through good works, through upliftment, through dignity, through fear, through coercion, through the accusation of sin. Damnation, karma, and consequences.
I think that's how they keep you. I don't think that's how they attract you.
I like the pretty cathedrals.
The architecture is nice. It looks like a really welcoming place.
Yeah.
High ceilings, a lot of stone, beautiful glass.
Yeah. I don't know. They freak me out. That's why I like them.
Well, okay. Good point. Well, when you look at, you know, the principles of sacred, mind-bending, influential architecture and geometry, that's what you're seeing. So, you know, you're wise to be freaked out. Because you're creating, you know, cathedrals of authority, right? Cathedrals of an ancient, you know, call it belief system. Something that you can belong to that will protect you, that will gift you for your faith and ongoing generosity.
That's putting lipstick on a pig.
That's putting lipstick on a pig.
An imaginary sugar daddy in the sky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the sugar daddy in the sky.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to die is the problem, maybe.
Yeah, so
they're offering everlasting life, right?
I don't know. I mean, you could, if you talk to a bunch of people that go to any local church and say, "Is this a part of your faith? Have you found succor, nourishment, or relief by going to the faith of the church, whatever church it is, in exchange for the relief of everlasting life?" I don't know how many people would say that's exactly why.
Well, in the beginning, it was because they were the seat of, you know, they had jobs, they had money, and the cathedrals were the center of
commerce.
Of commerce in existence.
That's right, commerce in existence.
If you're hungry,
that's right.
You get motivated.
It's all hunger driven. Yeah. That's right.
And that's the earliest.
That's right. That's right. It's hunger driven.
Right.
Yeah.
What food?
That's who controlled the granaries.
How'd they get it? Oh, okay. I'll believe you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You have food.
That's right. Food? I'm in. I believe.
Got it.
I'm saved. Uh-huh. Yeah, for sure.
I'll just stay for one snack.
One cookie, yeah. One cookie. Then I got to go. We'll see you next week. All right.
Will you have snacks next week?
I'll come back next week. Hat? The multicolored hat? All right. See you around.
What kind of cake is this or whatever? So weird.
That's a raisin soda bread.
Raisin soda bread?
Yeah.
It's like Easter bread.
Yeah.
It's already cut up.
Yeah. It's cut.
It reminds me of that anyway.
Yeah. It's good. Looks like it'd make a really, really nice French toast.
It's really light.
Yeah.
Any questions?
What's the meaning of this?
I was thinking about when nothing came into being, it also sort of seems to have a double meaning. Because I think when you used it...
Only a double?
Yeah, right. I don't even know what you meant, but
I'm the last one to know.
If you take it in another sense, it's nothing, no thing came into being.
Yeah.
So that's kind of.
Yeah.
That's my boat.
Yeah. we love the poetry of cosmology. I mean, in order to keep ourselves buoyantly vital, what we call mind turns to the seductive vitality of cosmology. And we love knowledge and insight and introspection and magical teachings that nobody else knows. And we love incantations, whether we're, you know, making scrambled eggs or something more elaborate.
It's like it's the eternal... not quest. It's just, it's like the eternal amusement ride.
Yes. Yes.
And how,
yeah.
What you got for me?
Yeah, which is fun to use as a, let's say, an enduring metaphor. So in the context of what you might call, you know, liberated personas, there's a handful of them out there, you know, you can find them if you like. What you could say is that the subtlety or the range of their entertainment or enjoyment field is of a different nature than, you know, call it a more superficial level of enjoyment that, you know, we might find through, you know, creature comfort.
So when you say a handful of them, who do you mean?
You know, find them in your own time or not.
I mean, would you say Dalai Lama or someone like that? You mean someone?
Dalai Lama.
Poser.
Dalai Lama is a, he's a very, you know, enigmatic, curious creature on the world stage.
So
right?
Speaking of specific beings, as when you say there's a handful of
generically, them. Generically.
Famous or otherwise, I'm sure. You know, I mean,
jump on YouTube and type in non-duality, you know, or type in Buddhism or type in Hinduism or type in yoga, and you'll be treated to a never-ending, you know, nest of talking heads that enjoy something that you don't enjoy. Or not. I don't, you know. Yeah. You know, when you talk about, let's call it the, you know, the yoga of the myth of liberation, you've got all these different kinds of, you know, celebrities throughout history that you can use to attempt to punctuate or emphasize what the fuck happened to them. Why do they look so, you know, beatific? Why could they sit, you know, unaware of the world for decades while vermin chewed their flesh? And they weren't going, ouch, fuck, shit, I hate it down here in this cavern. You know? I mean, bilocating, you know. Walking on water, healing the sick. Ascending to heaven, you know. After death. You know, you name it. Myths a poppin'. And I'm not suggesting these things didn't happen. I'm happy if they did. Who cares? But you'll notice that no matter what happened, legitimately or otherwise, enrolls you in yet another form of hypnosis.
You can spend a lot of time, like, learning theology.
No question about it.
A lot of time.
That's right.
Or philosophy. Or math. Or anything else.
It never ends.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like what happens to you, in you, if you're confronted with the suggestion that there is no deliverable.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to be attained or perfected. And you're not relying on consciousness or experience to be the basis of your discovery. Now you're completely, you know, outside the realm of what's permissible. Yeah, there's one under there. Within the human meme, whether it's conformist reality or something that appears to have transcended conformist reality.
Well, I don't know, it becomes pretty apparent whether that you can have a parency, but we're all, nobody knows what's going on. And when you listen to the experts and, you know, the physicists and the scientists and you're like, wait a minute, they really don't know what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
They're really guessing here.
Yeah.
And suddenly string theory is, you know, well, we're probably not going to pursue that anymore. And like, there's nobody that knows what's going on.
No.
It's just a whole big guessing
game. Yeah.
There's enough enthusiasm behind it, like that guy.
Silva.
Yeah,
celebrity. Well,
yeah.
Celebrity.
Yeah,
you happen to be.
It draws people in anyway.
Have a celebrity persona.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like squirrel. Yeah. This is very curious because this tendency, you know, we have for conforming to whatever shows up, agreeably or disagreeably, is still conforming. Agreement or disagreement is still conforming. What happens, if even happening is the right word, within the intimacy, the sovereignty, and the privacy of your own consciousness if there's no context and no craving for one? Are you the village idiot, and should we put you away?
Yes.
Sometimes that works. Sometimes it does. Or
well, I think it's our questioning nature. You know, whatever it is that just makes us constantly question, what are we doing here with all the big W questions?
Yeah.
That's what gets us into messes like this.
Yeah.
It gets us into all the messes.
Yeah.
Yeah? Uh-huh.
Right? It just starts with a big question that we constantly want an answer for.
Whatever metaphor, you know, you like to use is, you know, you're welcome to use it. And you can be very infatuated with a certain metaphor for a period of time and then find yourself, I don't use that metaphor anymore, because it's like, oh, I don't know what to believe in anymore. Mm-hmm. So you can't even find, you know, a cogent question that defines you as a, you know, curiosity, spiritual seeker, or, you know, lover of life. You can be released from Buddhism and Hinduism and Judo Christendom and Islam and physicism. Mysticisms of all kinds. You know, Western occultism. You can be relieved, absolutely, of every profound body of metaphor that has arisen of its own accord in the so-called, you know, history of human experience. You can be relieved of all of it. And if you dare, you know, follow that kernel, well, you'll have fewer and fewer groups to be able to go to have the fun you love to have.
Have to remain in Bucks County.
Fewer and fewer groups to go to where you can say, I'm down with that shit.
Good thing I'm not a group person.
Yeah, that's right. Otherwise, we'd be seeing you more often. Aha, bada boom. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll see you at the next Night Sky Sangha go around.
Which is tomorrow.